In our society, we have become, as I mentioned earlier, we have become very much enchanted by the idea of individual autonomy. So that when we see something bad happen, we look for the perpetrator. We look for who's wrong. We spend a great amount of time when some great evil is revealed. We spend a great amount of time identifying who's responsible, and we're looking for the individuals, so that our understanding of evil, generally speaking, is the idea that evil and great evil happens when a lot of individuals make very bad choices, very evil choices. And so in the Indian residential schools, we look for who was responsible. And for many people, that was what the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was about who's responsible for that? Who are the people that were bad? And there are certainly bad guys in this whole process, and they're virtually all guys, so I can use that term. But this fails to understand the depth and breadth of evil that we're talking about, because what we are talking about is a type of systemic evil which goes beyond goes beyond individual choice, individual agency. Systemic evil describes a process by which a particular idea, a particular approach becomes a part of law, governance, culture, and the various institutions of society. So the basis for the Indian residential schools was a larger system that we might call colonial. You could call it racist if you want. But it is based on some assumptions, very wicked assumptions, about indigenous people and their relationship to worldwide culture and worldwide history. So many people have identified the doctrine of discovery as the key idea that animates this system of evil. The idea of the doctrine of discovery is that the people here in the Americas were so primitive that they could be discovered in the same way that a land, a people, and animals and other things could be discovered. The doctrine of discovery gives to the discoverer the power and authority over the discovered. And this doctrine of discovery begins to permeate all of the various institutions of our society here in the Americas, so that it becomes a part of law, it becomes a part of the way institutions look at indigenous people, it becomes a part of the way that the church looks at indigenous people as well. Indigenous people are judged in this system to be so primitive that they are going to be best served by becoming a part of the larger culture, by become a part of the larger society, and disappear in any way, shape, or form that has to do with their past identity, their cultural identity. We now call ideas and actions like this, we call these genocidal, because what happens when these ideas permeate culture, governance, government, law, when they permeate, they become deadly in their impact. So the 94 calls to action of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission deal with not with a lot of things that don't have to do directly with the schools, but have to do with that larger systemic evil that we would call colonialism. It's an interest in dismantling the way in which our society, culture, laws, and the way that people understand and experience indigenous people, it's a way of dismantling that so that we can keep something like this from happening again. So it is focused on systemic evil. Now, in the Christian church, particularly in biblical times, there was a great interest in systemic evil. Again, we're so used now in the Christian church to focus on the individual and their relationship with God that we track the relationship of God in an individual soul. We have all kinds of memoirs, testimonies, basically the individual story of how someone comes to know God. That's not insignificant. I'm not saying anything bad about it. What I'm trying to say is that from a biblical point of view, from the point of view of the early church, this would be narrow and would reduce the truth about God to something which is individualistic and something divorced from the rest of society. It doesn't give you much help in understanding what's going on. If you are an oppressed person, if you are a part of a society where there is oppression and evil, it isn't very helpful to focus on individual responsibility. In fact, it can be a distraction from any kind of analysis of how evil works in a broader system. So in the New Testament, there is a tremendous amount of interest in the way what Paul called the principalities and powers operate. They noticed that evil had a way of inhabiting structures, laws, governments, and societies, institutions that would corrupt and distort the purpose and flourishing of human life. So they noticed that great rulers could become the enemies of people. And there's a tremendous number of stories throughout the Bible, but particularly in the New Testament, that talks about the way in which rulers became enemies of the innocent. The stories about the holy innocents being an example. The way in which Jesus is treated, the way in which the Christmas story is told, there is this conflict between the personality of evil as it existed in that day and the way in which that evil influenced and sought to destroy human life and human flourishing. It was at odds with the well-being of life. It was at odds. And so we have great rulers acting like powerless and fearful people, advancing their cause at the expense of life. Now, when systemic evil takes hold of institutions and governments, we often see people act in this way. And that's what we saw in the creation and in the development, the practice of the residential schools. Christian institutions acted in sharp contrast to their basic understanding of what life is about. Christian institutions made it their purpose to destroy family life and to interfere with family life. Christian institutions dehumanized indigenous young people to such an extent that they became the victims of a massive abuse, sexual, physical, and in other ways. We now know that there were nutrition experiments, all kinds of things that we would associate with Nazi regimes. We find all of these things happening in schools that were basically being operated by the Christian churches. So what I'm trying to portray is the way systemic evil can overcome the ideology, the aspirations, the ideals of a people, and can corrupt and distort them to the point that individuals who are committed to these ideals become themselves corrupted and complicit in these kinds of evils, to the point that we can almost say that they were flooded by the overwhelming systemic evil that they were a part of. So people say to me all the time, I just got a letter from someone today complaining that they were involved with the residential schools and they, as an individual, operated out of the best intentions with a commitment to the students and with only good in mind. This person was complaining about my use of the term systemic evil to describe what happened with the residential schools. I don't think that they understood what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that there are ways in which a culture can be overcome, a whole society can be overcome by ideas that are bad. Now, Paul speaks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, in which he describes strongholds and citadels of thought. This is what he places refers to as principalities and powers, the way in which certain ideas, certain practices can become a part of a whole system. Now, long after it becomes unacceptable in society to express outright prejudice towards indigenous people, long after that's acceptable, the way in which institutions have been shaped by this systemic evil continue. And that's what the 94 calls to action are addressing. They're addressing the way systemic evil influenced law, politics, culture, and business to create a system that did such massive harm. And today, we find that system has been exported by Canada around the world, that it has, in our mining operations and in other ways in which our industry and technology has expanded around the world, we see our institutions acting in a way that are a direct denial of what we would say our values and ideals are as a society. This is the way systemic evil infects an entire way of thinking, an entire way of living, an entire way of acting. And that is what was going on in the residential schools, a massive instance of systemic evil that was part of a larger systemic evil that we would call colonialism. And again, I tried to identify some of the ideas that animated that whole system and became a part of the way we thought and we acted. Now, it's very important for us to trace this trajectory of evil. It's very important for us to understand it as a way of preparing ourselves for its opposite, and that is a trajectory of healing and reconciliation.